What we're doing today is announcing that there will be a contest of election filed in the Ohio Supreme Court contesting the presidential election in Ohio. The contest of election will be filed by 25 electors as provided under the statute. The statute provides that those electors may have voted for or against any particular candidate that's being contested. The groups that will be supporting this contest are nonpartisan organizations. The purpose of the contest of the election is to engage the second statutory procedure, which is the contest of election section, to verify the accuracy of the vote and the integrity and honesty of the election process in Ohio in this past presidential election. This is different from the recount, which has been announced by the Green and Libertarian Party candidates. It's a separate statutory procedure. Now, today, there are three lawyers here, myself, Bob Fetrakis, and Susan Truitt. We will be part of the lawyer team working on this case. We are in the process of putting together a larger lawyer team to work on this case. We are also in the process of putting together the 25, at least 25, we'll have many, many more, electors who will be the, who have standing and will be the formal contestants in this petition. We're also in the process of putting together organizational support. We're hopeful that there will be a broad base of public interest organizations, including NAACP and People for the American Way, Common Cause, Alliance for Democracy, and as many public interest organizations that care to be involved, we welcome their involvement. Now, first question that you're probably going to ask is what causes you to think that you could possibly meet the standard is required by statute that a contest of election must put at issue the result of the election in view of the reported 138,000 vote spread between the winning candidate and the losing candidate. The answer to that is the exit polls, which are scientifically conducted by objective, neutral organizations, reported a different result from what was reported in the by the Secretary of State. That is prima facie evidence that the actual result in this election is at issue. Now, furthermore, there's a requirement that that there be some kind of irregularity that has gone on. There have been three hearings in which the three lawyers here have been involved. Two here in Columbus, one in Cincinnati last night. There are a series of hearings going on in Cleveland, including another one which will take place on Saturday in which the three of us will be participating. There have been an abundant number of reports of irregularities in the election. In addition, we have academic people, researchers from all over the country examining the voting data that generated out of the election here on November 2nd. We'll have a great deal of analysis. We're going to have a large number of experts who will be examining this material and commenting on it. I'd like to briefly turn it over to Bob Fetrakis for a moment, and then we'll, and also Susan, and then we'll answer questions. Bob?
Yeah. Again, we're in contact with a variety of people, political scientists and statisticians from MIT, from Caltech. The sworn statements that we've received should give everyone cause to go forward in terms of this inquiry. I don't think it's good enough for the people of Ohio to have the partisan parties only involved in this process, that there's something infinitely more important at stake here than whether George Bush or John Kerry won. That is the integrity of the U.S. electoral systems. And quite frankly, the things that we've heard under oath through public testimony in sworn affidavit has given us great pause in terms of whether or not there was a fair and free election. And what we intend to do is to go forward and to challenge the process and to enter it and to make sure that some people are looking at it not based on their allegiance to a party or a candidate, but their allegiance to the state of Ohio and to the U.S. Constitution.
Please make no mistake, there is nothing short of democracy at risk here. And we are going to examine this election because the right of the people to voice their opinion by voting is threatened by the results of this election based upon the exit polls and based upon the testimony that we received from hundreds of voters who were disenfranchised, intimidated, or somehow discouraged from voting. And it is our intent to examine this election to prevail so that we will have a democracy in this country, so that we will not have our voices shut down.
In plain language, what will this look at that a recount won't look at?
It will look at irregularities. It'll look at affirmative evidence of problems in the election process. It will bring into the picture expert testimony in regard to ways to interpret what's happened. Hopefully it will include, I would say this. We hope that the recount will be not a conventional recount, that part of the recount will be an audit of all machines which are not subject to verification through a paper trail. So that the both in the recount and in this contest of election, there will be national experts looking at the source code, the people who worked on these machines, and anyone involved in a tabulation for which there's not a paper trail. So if it's duplicative, fine. If it can be done, it cannot be done in the context of the recount, but can be done in the context of the contest of election, we want to do it.
On Monday's hearing, former school board member Bill Moss, who was one of the panelists there, suggested that Ohio might be a difficult battleground in which to litigate such a measure because of the overwhelmingly Republican judiciary, especially in the Sixth Federal Circuit Court of Appeals. Do you anticipate any problems with that if it does get litigated to that level?
Well, the real problem with both the contest of election and the recount is the problem of time. These are statutory procedures. We have a presidential election pending, and unless this can be done quite expeditiously, there's a potential that both of these procedures will be overridden, and it will be so the decisions will be made by some other means, a political means. So it's time is critical, and that's why we're announcing this today. We want the public to know about it. We intend to file as soon as we can. There is ambiguity in the statute in terms of what date that is. But we intend to file as soon as we can. You had a question, Andrew?
What are the mechanics of this? Who are you asking? A decision has to be made before this can go forward. Can you explain that?
Well, before it goes forward, you have to have the people with standing who are at least 25 electors. They have yet to be gathered and committed to this. We also want to have a broad base of organizational support. At the hearings in Columbus, if you were not there, there were a number of organizations attending, who have a stake in this in terms of doing what they can to assure the integrity of our democracy. So we want to have all that lined up before we file. We also, the groups like Alliance for Democracy, Common Cause, all these organizations have an approval process that they go through before they launch litigation. Or are involved in litigation, and so we're announcing this as that process is in process right now.
But you asked the Supreme Court. That's what the law.
Under the statute, you file it with the Ohio Supreme Court. Under the statute, the Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court or a justice designated by him decides the contest of election. We just heard, and I'd heard from another source, that the last time this statute was invoked was in the Paul Pfeiffer. Lee Fisher election, and the Chief Justice at that time was Tom Moyer, and he decided irrespective of the wording of the statute, that he would make the matter, present the matter to the entire Supreme Court, and that's the group that made the decision.
Does the Supreme Court decide whether or not to hear it or not hear it, and they just ignore it and it goes away?
Well, you file it with them, and then it's subject. It's just like any other litigation. People can say, "Hey, they haven't met the requirements. Dismiss the case." You proceed as a normal court case.
How long does the court have to decide what happens?
Everything is very accelerated because of the time constraints of an election, but in this case, it's even more compressed because of the national deadlines for the Electoral College. We haven't even thought about that at this point. I'm not going to comment on that.
Is there a possibility of getting an injunction to prevent the electors in Ohio from meeting on the 13th?
There are lots of things that are possible, and I don't want to speculate on anything like that.
Long lines at the polls caused by a lack of machines, that's been one of the accusations made at your hearing. How do you quantify that?
Well, it's already quantified. We already have a scatter chart. Scattergram, which shows there's a direct correlation between where Kerry got 70, 80, 90% and the lack of machines. We have, one of the reasons we're going forward is we waited till we actually quantified. Also, as we speak, I would direct you to the flowchart given by the Franklin County Board of Elections Director. You'll see what are really odd measurements for machines placed by the end of the day. And again, what we want to know is how many machines were placed at the beginning of the day when there was 2-3 hour lines in the morning. Why would you use such a measurement as machines placed at the end of the day? And increasingly what we're finding is that the logs and the testimony indicates that between 11 and 3 o'clock, a lot of those machines weren't in place, so that the numbers are actually much, much worse. And there is a direct correlation and I don't think it matters so much to Kerry, but to what I see as a protected class of African Americans, because that's where you're really finding the shortage of machines.
But how do you quantify that?
It's easy to quantify. They've already quantified it. They have a list of where they put the machine. Now, the broader question in the contest is whether or not we believe that, well, historically, let me give you two examples. A lot of precincts that you'll see in Columbus in the inner city lost a machine based on past voter turnout. But at the same times on the book were 25, 28, 19% increases in voter registrations. While the same equivalent in Upper Arlington, if you go to that chart, to lose a machine, they lost 25% of their voter registration. So what we need to ask ourselves is why in an area where there's African American vote, which is the greatest predictor for a Kerry vote, do you have more of the machines taken away, and it doesn't seem in any way to be a consistent pattern. Those are the things that we want to argue. Also, we have certain counties that we have targeted under oath. If you've got more votes from a county out of the polling place than people signed in, I think we want to go down there and touch the voter logs in specific counties and look at the authorization and see how you get that type of mistake. If in Miami County you got 19,000 votes coming in because of a computer glitch after 100% have reported, and it comes in at the exact same ratio down to the last 100th, the question is, we need to get a computer forensic expert and to look at that machine. Because as a political scientist, I am taught that looks like someone simply extrapolated a ratio. Those are the things. We don't know what happened, but the people of Ohio, all the voters, need to know what happened on Election Day.
Cliff, is this going to be filed before Thanksgiving?
It's going to be filed as soon as possible. We're going to be doing the research to make that determination and judgment. If it's not a clear question, we may file, even if it's going to be dismissed as premature, and we'll refile it when it is timely. But timing is critical in this matter, because the discovery, and the litigation of this under state law must proceed aggressively in order to avoid being preempted by the presidential schedule.
You don't even have your 25 electors yet.
That's not a problem. We probably, how many have we had testify? We probably got 500 people that are under oath, probably 500 people under oath, thousands of people under oath by affidavit. I'm talking about people in sworn testimony. There's a question of which people we would choose to make part of the sample or all. The statute says at least 25. That's not a problem. They're the equivalent of a deposition equivalent of an affidavit, because no adverse party was a part of the proceeding with the right of cross-examination. So in a deposition, the litigant parties, both sides, have the opportunity to examine, cross-examine. So we had no cross-examination in these hearings. These could not be used as a deposition in this case. It can be used as an equivalent of an affidavit.
Is the goal to get the court to declare one candidate or another deserves 10,000 extra votes or 20,000 extra votes? Or is the goal that you have the court rule the election is void? What's the final result?
The objective is to get to the truth, and how that is practically the impact and implications of that is another question. Under the statute, the judge can set the election aside and call for a new election. Now, you consider the possibility of the practicality of that or whether or not that's feasible from a political standpoint in the context of a presidential election, but that's beyond our worries at this point in time. What's critically important, whether it's President Bush or Senator Kerry, whoever has actually been elected, what's critically important is to know that you won by an honest election. So it's in the interest of both sides as American citizens to know the truth and to have this answer. And that's what we intend to help accomplish through this litigation, to the best of our ability.
Are you coordinating with any of the campaigns, either Bush or Kerry?
We are asking questions. We are not coordinating in the sense of being guided by them. We are asking questions. I'll give you an example. We're interested in, we lawyers up here in our group are interested in the quality of the recount. So we're asking questions. How is this going to be staffed? And I have been advised by Don McTighe, who's representing the Ohio Democratic Party, that the Ohio Democratic Party is undertaking the responsibility to fully staff and train observers of the recount. That gives peace of mind, I can assure you, to our group, and I'm sure to the people in the recount group, who want to be sure that somebody is taking the responsibility to make sure that there's adequately staffed and trained people to participate.
Yeah, and we would think that perhaps the co-chair of the Bush-Cheney re-election campaign, Mr. Blackwell, may take an interest from the other side.
Are there any long-term electoral reforms that you can imagine might come out of this effort after this particular process is concluded? What lies ahead?
Well, we've already indicated that all the information we gathered is going forth into the public marketplace. All the testimony, all the affidavits, we'll be issuing a report under the Alliance for Democracy, and I anticipate it'll have very specific recommendations as to how to improve the system. We're also, I think, there'll be a documentary. We'll be releasing the footage we have on Election Day that we've gathered. So all of this will go forward, not only looking to this election, but looking to the year 2006 and 2008.
All the organizations that you said that you're hoping to get their support are left-leaning organizations. Isn't this just an effort to try to get Senator Kerry elected if you think he wasn't elected? How was this a bipartisan?
Well, I would say, first of all, for Common Cause. Common Cause was founded by John Gardner, a Republican. Common Cause has been headed since John Gardner by Archibald Cox. Archibald Cox was selected by Elliot Richardson in the next Nixon administration, not because of any partisanship, but because of his objectivity, his strict adherence to legal principles, and including fairness. Common Cause is now chaired by Derek Bach, president of Harvard University. I don't know his political affiliation. Derek Bach, in addition to serving as chairman of Common Cause, is also chairman of one of the leading committees on electoral reform of the Committee for Economic Development. The Committee for Economic Development is a consortium of corporations, including General Electric and other reputable corporations, as well as academic figures. And it is not by any means a left-leaning, in my view, a left-leaning organization. Common Cause consists of Republicans and Democrats and Independents. Our most recent executive director was Ray Cadwalader, who was a Republican, was a Republican legislator, has voted in every election from the time he was age eligible, has always supported Republican candidates, The shared commitment of members of Common Cause is to honest government, to the integrity of the process. So I would disagree with your statement that it's left-leaning. Secondly, I want to mention a group. One of the groups that participated in the hearings here in Columbus was the NAACP. I don't consider it left-leaning to believe in equal protection for members of the black race. That's not left-leaning. That's honest. Honest respect for our Constitution and our founding principles.
And their hearing officer was a well-known Republican, Sybil McNabb, so.
So none of these groups that helped co-sponsor the hearings that you were at, they haven't really signed on to support the lawsuit, although you're hoping they will. The NAACP has not signed on, the League of Women Voters, I don't know if it's the NIO or Common Cause, but none of those groups, you can't say the suit has been filed by the groups yet.
The groups that you mentioned were not, League of Women Voters wasn't involved. The groups you mentioned, the Alliance for Democracy, is of which I am national co-chairman, has the matter under review as its national council. The other co-chairman is in agreement with the Alliance being fully involved in this, and I anticipate that the Alliance will be fully supportive of this. Common Cause, the matter is under review at this time. It'll be taken up by the national board at the appropriate time. What is it? Do you remember Granny D, the lady that walked through Ohio and across the country in support of campaign reform? She is a strategic partner of the Alliance for Democracy. She's our hero. John McCain and Senator Feingold, after the passage of McCain-Feingold, embraced her and gave her credit for the passage of that legislation. She's an angel in our midst. She's typical of what the Alliance for Democracy believes in, which is honest government, taking the money out of the system, et cetera, et cetera. The Alliance for Democracy was founded by Ronnie Duggar, who also founded the Texas Observer. He's a well-respected journalist. He is an author of multiple books, a biography of Ronald Reagan, Lyndon Johnson. He also is the author of the seminal work on the pitfalls of electronic voting machines. I believe it was 1988, New Yorker magazine. He's also an author cited in the current issue of Harper's Magazine, updating his views on the electronic voting. He is one of the experts that we are relying upon in terms and will be relying upon in this case before the Ohio Supreme Court. There's a difference between the objective scientific exit polls, which showed Kerry winning significantly, and the reported result of the unofficial reported result the night of the election. There have been many irregularities and peculiarities in the data that was reported by the Secretary of State on November 2nd and 3rd.
And some of that's already in the public mind. Again, Gahanna 1B, where again, if 638 votes are cast and the president gets 4,258, that appears to us to be an obvious factual irregularity. If we begin to look at a variety of reports under oath of machines that were in use all day showing no votes, even in the commissioner's race. So these are the types of questions. We want to know what happened in Warren County. We'd like to see the documents, who in the Office of Homeland Security decided to throw out the independent observers and the media. We think that's an important question for the First Amendment with its long-standing role of the independent media as watchdog. To me, that's an irregularity when that's the only county. you've got, again, people under oath saying that they looked at logbooks where it looked like it was all in the same signature. We've got to see what is the problem, why some areas reported over 100% vote in Cuyahoga County. Also, Auglaize County, we need to figure out if it's true that an unauthorized person, former employee of ESNS, did in fact, I mean, the Wapakoneta News said, reported the letter. What was the reason for the violation of protocol if that took place? Also, we really need to see, and this is very important, the punch card machines. Anyone who's looked at punch cards machines, and I speak as a political scientist, know that what bond that paper is on, Mr. Blackwell knows all about paper bond because he wanted it on 80-pound weight, but was it on 100-pound weight? Was it on 80? What were the perforations like? We would actually like to feel the punch cards in areas where, and weigh them where there was higher weight. We want to know who calibrated the OptiScan machines, and what if perhaps some were accidentally or inadvertently or intentionally turned up if there's a higher rate of rejection in certain areas. All of those are well established in the objective political science literature. Those are the things we need to look at.
And just as an example, last night there was testimony given about Warren County. One of the people testifying under oath, a young mother, testified that Warren County has seen a tremendous influx of population since the 2000 election. And then in contrast to 2000, when it was just overwhelmingly in support of Bush, there was, in this election context, there was a lot of Kerry support. Yet when the votes were counted in Warren County, it was the same percentage support for Kerry as Gore had in the 2000 election, which he said made no sense to anyone who lived in that county.
Which translated, because of the population growth, to a 14,000 vote gain by the president. But again, the question of the exit polls, in fact, the exit polls may be right in a sense if there were errors in the provisional ballots, in the so-called ballots that didn't record a vote. If I'm coming out and saying I voted for one candidate or the other, but disproportionately one of those candidates' ballots are not being counted because of some sort of inadvertent error in terms of a punch card machine. Remember this. Remember, we all laughed when, after Florida, it was reported in the mainstream press that certain counties in Ohio, poor counties, had purchased the machines that had malfunctioned in the 2000 Florida election. So we need to really get in there, look at those machines. We've got a printer who's come to us and sworn an affidavit that he was asked to use a heavier pound paperweight and not cut it quite as precise. Now, that's the type of evidence that we'd like to get into the record and take a look at and see if, in some ways, that will match to a higher error of rejection. And that if we can hold those ballots up, just like they did in Florida, if we've got their machines, and see if, under Ohio law, we can see the intent of the voter.
You think that the guy, the person who would make the perforations for the punching out said that he was told to make...
He was asked if he could, in fact, make perforations that weren't quite as easy for the chads to fall out. He says he could, but he didn't. He swears under oath, but he says that he, under oath, that he was asked.
Susan Truitt, you're also the head of a group called Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections, largely credited with having pressured the Secretary of State to retreat from his earlier support for the Diebold paperless electronic voting machines. What do you make of the reports that indicate that the discrepancies between the exit polls and the reported electronic voting results are wider in counties that use the direct record electronic voting machines than they were in counties that use the standard punch card method?
Well, it comes as no surprise to anyone who's followed the history of electronic voting machines, and that's why our group came out so strongly against the purchase of any new electronic voting machines that were paperless for this year. And in fact, Ohio purchased no new electronic voting machines for this year, but they had seven counties that already had paperless voting machines in place. And so, of course, it raises questions about the validity of that vote. Unfortunately, with an electronic voting machine that has no paper trail, there's no way to verify if every vote that was counted as it was cast. And that is the problem with those machines.
I would just like to add that Ronnie Duggar assures me that even though what Susan has said is true, if you bring in the people with the appropriate expertise, there are ways that computer manipulation can be detected. And he would like to make sure that the people who were working on these machines without any kind of check, an audit trail, are examined to determine any possible possibility of manipulation.
If the court orders that such a thing can be done, but must be done with your own resources, do you have the resources to do?
Yes, we
do.
We have the experts. We have the financing required to retain and pay experts. We are prepared to litigate full tilt.
Sure. We'd like to bring in the political scientist and statistician from the University of Pennsylvania that concluded the odds of all the exit polls being systematically wrong, being 250 million to one. I would like to see David Dill come in here, who I consider one of the foremost experts, computer science experts for Stanford. It's about time that we get all of this on the record in a process and move it out of the academic corridors where they've been debating it since the year 2000 and into the public domain.
If I could, I'd like to make one other point. There's been some discussion about the alternative media and internet carrying stories of conspiracy theories, etc., whereas the mainstream media is saying that there's no doubt as to the result. And I guess my view on that is, and our view on that, is how do you know what the facts are until you get the facts? And who can object to taking a little time and spending some money to examine the facts in an objective, honest way? And let's not prejudge the facts until we get the facts.
And again, as a political science and investigative reporter, I was always taught that first thing you do is you go out rationally and comprehensively and gather the facts, and then you come to a conclusion. And many of the media that's been in this, I mean, in very few cases, they weren't at the hearing. You know, in many cases, I didn't see the New York Times there. And while much of the foreign world has taken interest in this, I would say, let's gather the information and then see where it goes. Looks like there's massive irregularities. We've got hundreds and hundreds of sworn statements. It needs to go into a process where we can see who's telling the truth.
I want to thank you all for your attendance, and feel free to contact any of us if you have any further questions.